I was born at the height of industry, at the finale of bebop and the crest of the civil rights movement. There was talk of technology. My favorite Martian was on TV, and Lassie. Africa was Tarzan. My father was a janitor. My mother was a light-skinned woman. I, the dark child of it. My great-grandmother was old. 60s television was a panoply of white stars, the Vietnam War, and parading crusaders. Johnson, Lady Bird. Nixon, Watergate. Ford, Lucky. Betty Ford Center. Carter, Reagan. Technology industry is dust. Reagan, Bush, Clinton. Another Bush with more promises of change.
I'm feeling woozy, you might lose me if you don't hold me real tight. You embrace me when you face me, when you kiss me, it's night. I see stars, the room starts spinning, and I feel like sinning all night. I'm feeling woozy, you might lose me if you don't hold me real tight. Baby, I'm telling you, your kisses are out of sight. They make me woozy, I want you to use me, downright abuse me all night. I'm feeling woozy, you might lose me if you don't hold me real tight.
You're listening to www.killradio.org. Welcome to Higher Ground Coast to Coast. This is James Maverick, and I hope you're having a great afternoon. It is nice, balmy. Is it cool enough to be balmy, or... I don't know exactly what balmy is, but I think it kind of fits. It's a nice balmy summer day today. So we're just hanging out here, and I've got two guests here. Oh, by the way, you just finished listening to a couple of tunes by a good friend of mine. Her name is Elle Rivera, and that is from her CD entitled An Artist Named Elle Rivera. We're going to be playing Elle during the breaks in the show, so you get to know her, and you're also going to get to know a couple of the poets that I have here on the program today. One is a transplanted gentleman, artist from Chicago. His name's Stash Maciek. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
Okay, great. And he's been in Los Angeles for a number of years. How long?
Three or four years.
Four-ish. He's been here for four-ish years. And also, I'd like to welcome Teresa to the show, too. Teresa is part of the Valley Contemporary Poets. She is also works using her poetry to help kids who are at risk. And just like Elle Rivera did. As a matter of fact, if you listened to the program last week, we mentioned both Elle Rivera and Teresa both in the same sentence because they both do really good work with the kids. So welcome to Higher Ground Coast to Coast.
Thanks, James.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking poetry. We're going to be talking motivation. We're going to talk about stuff that is inside and outside of our lives that affect what we put on the page. So, Stash is bouncing. He's kind of like champing at the bit. So I guess I'm going to start with you there.
No?
Yeah? Okay. Let's get started. So you've done a lot of eclectic work in Chicago. You've been working in some bars. You've also done poetry in Chicago, and you've been in Los Angeles for about four-ish years. What is the main difference between the poetry community in Chicago and that in Los Angeles?
The main difference,
mm-hmm.
is that almost every venue for reading poetry that I frequented in Chicago was in a saloon. And out here in L.A., they have readings at bookstores and readings at coffee shops and readings at salons and things like that. And so for me to bring, you know, there's people in Chicago who don't, they don't call themselves performance poets. They call themselves saloon poets. And for me to bring that style out here, kind of, when I first started reading, people were just like, who the hell is this? Because, you know, I mean, there's a podium and there's a mic, you know, and there's a stage, and I don't use any of those.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you're in a bar and you're trying to get people to pay attention, you kind of have to grab them by the lapels. So we tend to stalk around. You don't need a mic because you learn to project because you have to be louder than the TV sometimes.
Yeah.
And you better bring something that grabs people, whether it engages them intellectually or just entertains them. But you've got to grab people, you know, so they quit paying attention to the bottle in front of them for a couple of seconds and actually consider what you're doing. And to bring that style, that saloon style, to the salons of Los Angeles and the polite coffee houses and bookstores, I think that's the biggest difference between the two. I don't want to say I frightened people, but people just really didn't know what the hell was going on when I first started reading. I think people are a little bit more used to me now.
Oh, okay. Well, I kind of got used to you when you first started reading, so yeah. So yeah, when you say that, it makes me think of, have you ever seen Meet the Parents? Ben Stiller and Robert De Niro. And Robert De Niro kind of gives you the comparison between a dog's love and a cat's love. So yeah, it's like Los Angeles is the dog's love, which is kind of unconditional. We roll on our back, we wag our tail, but in Chicago, where you're in the saloon, you got to earn their love. Is that about right?
Well, you can put it that way. You can put it that way. That's very similar to a good friend of mine's from Germany, and I met him. He's from Germany. I met him in Chicago, and he now lives in L.A. And I asked him, you know, what the difference is, and he's like, well, people are a little bit more standoffish in Chicago. People are very gregarious in L.A. Hey, you know, here's my card. You know, call me. Have my sushi chef. Call your tennis pro. You know, all this stuff. But you know, it's a little superficial because, like, you never hear from this guy again.
Yeah, yeah.
In Chicago, it might take you two or three tries to break through somebody's crust, but once you broke through, that guy is going to go to the wall for you.
You know?
And that was the Ausländer. That was the German foreign take on the difference between the two cities. And I think it kind of translates over into the poetry scene a bit, for me anyway.
Yeah.
From my perspective.
Yeah. I do get that as well. I think there is a lot of I think there is a two-tier system. There are two people. There's the type of person here in Los Angeles, and correct me if I'm wrong, that, you know, is like, you know, real Hollywood and real, you know, cutesy and and hey, your sushi chef, call my pool boy, that kind of guy, and that you never hear from. But then you got the diehards. You have like the Brendan Constantines and the Rick Luperts and the Rafael Alvarados, who, if you sway them with your poetry, then you got a friend for life. You know, so let's see now. You've worked in some bars, and we talked about the bar scene in Chicago. And did you bring any
security? Because, you know, I'm not friendly enough to be a bartender.
Yeah.
You know?
But yeah, you've worked security.
You have to act like you care to be a bartender.
Yeah, I usually put on that, you know, bulldog mug myself, you know, and I get that, you know, I furrow my brow a little bit, makes me look like Mr. T, you know.
They go, why don't you smile? That's it. Say something funny. You got a game face.
You just flip it on them. I like that. Yeah. So, but yeah, security, has that, have you brought any of that to your poetry?
No, you know, I try not I actually try not to write about work too much.
Mm-hmm.
I have, since I've been out here, I've been doing different kinds of security. I'm doing some film shoot stuff and some like just equipment watch, really boring stuff where you get to stay up all night.
Mm-hmm.
But because you get to stay up all night, you know, you mm-hmm. get to you can read and you can write
mm-hmm.
and you know, try to turn that those overnighters into something good.
Mm-hmm.
Just recently, I was doing an overnighter equipment watch on the Santa Monica Pier,
mm-hmm.
And I watched that gentleman show up at about 3 a.m. and begin putting up his crosses on the beach, the Arlington West.
Oh yeah, yeah,
war
yeah.
protest that mm-hmm. goes on there, and I've got a little fodder for something. I'll share that with you later.
Okay, good.
But you know, so, and you know, there's been other times when, just kind of using your environment there. But I don't like to write about. I don't think. Have you ever heard me do a poem that was about a bar fight or anything like that? No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Just maybe the one about how to write a poem.
The one about how to write a poem?
That has maybe some inferences in that.
Oh, it might.
Was that how to write a poem or how to kill a guy?
You have that one too, don't you?
Yeah, because I remember the one how to kill a guy.
Well,
you know,
I have one called.
Everyone in Encino was like in stunned silence. You know.
And, well, that one's actually called Foreign Policy.
Uh huh.
And that's actually a political statement because it's actually how to take out a sentry.
Mm-hmm.
And but the one I think you're referring to is all good poets should know how to,
yeah. mm-hmm.
which is a big long list, a big grocery list poem about skills that might help you or skills that might be derivative of writing poems. Of course, that's what we're talking about, writing poems.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I'll probably have that here somewhere. I'll probably dig that out.
Okay. Well, yeah. After the break, we'll get to your poetry, which will be fun. And we'll kick back and really enjoy ourselves. And let's see. Teresa, how long have you been writing?
You know, I've been writing ever since I was 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't sleep when I was a kid. And I would get the flashlight and I would just write on little notebooks. And I remember going back to my parents' home and finding boxes and boxes of little notebooks with mm-hmm. stuff I have been writing ever since I was a kid.
Oh, cool.
But great. I started writing recently more heavily 5 years ago. My mom had died, and I think it spurred me on to mm-hmm. get some family stuff.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Very nice. So you've been influenced by your family.
Definitely.
And you've had other influences as well.
Right.
Yeah. And we've also talked about working with at-risk kids. And one of the things that Don and I were talking about last week was how when you give a child an instrument that they can use to discover their world or express what's going on in their world around them, they just lock onto it like a pit bull. And it's, you know, it's just finding that avenue of expression that they just really dig into. Tell me what it's like when kids kind of like find that discovery, especially, you know, since you're talking about at-risk kids, they might, I'm pretty certain they feel abandoned by their environment for most part. How do you get them to plug back in?
You know, my strategy has always been to create a lot of chaos in the room and have them be the one that straighten it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have a ton of activity and more mm-hmm. things that they can handle.
Mm-hmm.
And it really helps them be kind of the adult in the room and take it of their own. I'll hang out in the back and even disappear in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And it's them being in charge. And I just give them a list of, 25 things we need to do in a half hour. And everyone is on task.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they're using their creativity to solve the issues.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking to kids they wouldn't have talked. Like in one classroom, some kid actually went to the kid and said, "You're Chinese. I've never talked to a Chinese kid, but I've got to find out this answer for the teacher, so could I talk to you?" And kids were talking who never talked because I gave them just a ton of stuff to do.
Mm.
So that's typically my strategy, is to throw everything up in the air and let them pick it up.
Mm.
And that tends to have, and I never have to discipline the class that way either.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of chaos.
Yeah, but they hook up into it. They get engaged.
Because in their mind, they're so hyper and they've got so much going on that it fits. But they get to use their own individual ways to solve the problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I let them self-select what they're going to do or not do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, maybe each kid has to pick three things they're going to do, but it's totally up to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never had an issue.
Have you ever done that yourself with your poetry?
Save more.
Just thrown a whole bunch of stuff in the air and then just catch whatever drops put it in a poem.
I'd like to try that.
Yeah?
Good idea.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
Okay, yeah, let's be careful because we've got the ceiling fan here. So, yeah.
That would be really liberating. That would be, I would like to try that.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So, you're listening to Higher Ground, Coast to Coast. This is James Maverick. I'm here with Teresa and Stash Maciek. I've got some more that we're going to hit you with El Rivera, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Been the daughter my parents wanted to see, the scholar the teacher wanted to teach. I have delivered, I have delivered. Been the wife my husband wanted from me, the mother the children wanted to please. I have delivered, I have delivered. At days I'm tired and uninspired. I have delivered, I have delivered. At days I'm tired and uninspired. I have delivered, I have delivered. Got my money for the ferryman. Hope God understands. Been all I can be. Been all I can be. I have delivered. I have delivered. Been all I can be. Been all I can be. I have delivered, I have delivered, been all I can be, been all I can be.
So we're back. This is James Maverick, and I'm here with Stash and Teresa. How you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
Still okay.
Yes, we are.
Good, as long as we're okay. Cool. So let me see. Where did we leave off? We left off on working with kids and finding inspiration. Mm-hmm. And you were talking about your family inspiring you. And have you anything else that's inspired your poetry? Any environmental, political factors, social factors, news, current events?
Disclosing poet and mm-hmm. talk about personal things in my life, but I have written a few things. I don't know if I have it with me. I'll check. Mm-hmm. I work with women in prison,
mm-hmm.
and I have a few things that I've seen with the women that I've been working with,
mm-hmm.
just their situation, and each one of us that are there working with these women have found that there's a reason that we're all there,
mm-hmm.
that we're inspired by maybe the violence that they've been through, because in some way we've had it in our own, and it's a healing thing for us too.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been working on a series that I haven't read yet on the women in prison.
Ooh, and that touches on a very important part too, because you first talked about how you started writing poetry on a more consistent or constant level after your mother passed, and so there has to have been some essence of or some factor of healing mm-hmm. in writing your poetry right there. Mm-hmm. So let me go to Stash real quick. Stash, have you ever used poetry as a band-aid or as a healing energy?
That's all I use it for.
Yeah?
If people know that, well, why do you write? Well, I write to keep from going the rest of the way crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's definitely therapeutic. It's therapeutic to write it. It's therapeutic to share it. It's therapeutic to scream it. Mm. You know, I need to rattle my own brain. That's the best way to do it. You know, I think that writing in a lot of ways is it's like dreaming. You know, dreaming regulates your mind.
Mm.
You know, as near as I can tell, you have to dream. If you're not allowed to dream, they've done studies where they wake people up whenever they have a dream, and you know, they go crazy like inside 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
They have to dream.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to.
Yeah.
So it's like that.
Oh, cool. Cool.
So definitely, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Making sense or not even making sense, just regulating, you know, just kind of jumbling everything until it shakes into place.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And I do get that in a great deal of your poetry too. You do have that desperation that if I don't write this, shit is going to happen to me. Yeah. So yeah, exactly.
And if I don't scream it, it's not going to get out there.
That too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we've got some poetry that we're going to share too, right?
Yes.
So, okay, cool. Also, we also conduct an online poetry reading too. So if you are up for it, if you got the huevos to just pick up the phone and call, then do so, and we'd love to hear the work that you have as well. The phone number here is 213-252-0998. So yeah, pick up your pad and paper if you want, write a poem and then call us and let us know what you got. Okay, 213-252-0998. So we've got some screams on paper, and we've got some dreams on paper. Who wants to start? Okay, Stash is being chivalrous, and he says ladies first. So okay, we're going to start with Teresa.
That's because he's looking through his stuff. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait a minute. We got a phone call. Awesome. Hang on. Kill Radio.
Read my work worldwide.
I'd love to have you read your work worldwide. Who's this?
This is Radimir.
Radimir, this is James. You're on with Stash and Teresa.
Yeah, I know. I got the email, brother.
Oh, beautiful, man.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you have for us?
I've got a poem or two.
Okay. What are your poems, sir?
What are the poems? The first one is called Your Attitude is Getting in the Way, and the second one is called Her Face.
Okay. I like the titles already, so let's hear what you got.
All right. Can everybody? everybody hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you great.
All right, this one's called Your Attitude is Getting in the Way. Yeah, you who doubled as my friend told me not to come back. The eyes and ears had much too much of me. The improvisation you so weep has handcuffed you to the wall. Singing refrains of ego and blue, standing still before the ultimate fall. You looked me in the eye and shook my hand, then told me not to show up. Like the Romans did Jesus, like the west wind does dirt. Like my legs which could not convert, like the sun does earth. Like Cain did Abel, this God forsaken, unforsaken. Stolen lullaby of greed, confused underbelly of insolent rhyme. So incredibly incomplete in this utopian dream, this carnival of lies. Sent me packing to my nearest neighborhood guru, except he had seen you, so was much too ready for me. That's it.
Wow, that was cool.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So you liked it, huh?
Yeah, what was the title of that one again, Radomir?
Your Attitude is Getting in the Way.
I like that, yeah. We need to hear more of that in Los Angeles.
Well, I just moved here last October from NYC, the Big Apple, or as I like to call it, the Little Apple, New York City. So I'm trying to do my best to get around, you know, and fill the people in with my beautiful stuff.
All right. Well, welcome to Los Angeles, man.
Well, thank you, man.
And, yeah, I got to let you know that now that you're here in Los Angeles, you're going to be a New Yorker until you endure your first earthquake. After that, you're a native.
I think if I endured my first earthquake, I'd take the first train out of here and never come back.
Okay, see, that's what keeps you a New Yorker.
Yeah.
Okay.
You want to hear another poem?
Yeah, what's your other one, man?
It's called Her Face.
Okay.
It's been published in a quarterly, so...
What's the name of the quarterly, and where can we pick it up?
That's a good question. It's run by Don Kingfisher Campbell. He's the editor and the publisher, and it's a quarterly that he puts out, and I really don't know the name of it, unfortunately, but I know it's some kind of literary quarterly.
Okay, I think it's the San Gabriel Valley Quarterly. Could that
that's
be it?
Very good. Who the hell is this anyway?
This is James Maverick.
Yeah, James, that's what it's called.
Okay, great. Are you going to be reading at the Santa Catalina Public Library, I think, on Monday?
Tomorrow, no. I think he's got some kind of an event there, but I can't make it. I've got a stand-up comedy spot at the Comedy Store, and then I do a thing there called the Ding Dong Show at 10 o'clock over at the Comedy Store tomorrow night, so I'll be over there.
Okay.
What's your last name, James?
Maverick.
Maverick.
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
I am the artist formerly known as Boomer.
What's that?
I'm the artist formerly known as Boomer.
Whatever that means.
All okay. Right. So, yeah, you've got Her Face that you want to read for
yeah.
us. Okay, what you got?
Her Face. And she sits across from me in orange-seated booth at Dupar's restaurant on Ventura and Laurel Canyon. My California haunting ground. Her eyes as big as bugs. Her skin as clean as snow. Her nose as right can ever be. Her lips as red and soft as a rose petal. Her forehead like ripest apple. Clean and raw without lines, bumps, or bruises. Her chin supple, magnificent, and tall like those New York skyscrapers I loved as a child. Her earlobes scattered by brunette hair so free. Her ears hidden every time she moves. Her eyebrows mowing lawn she probably never kept. Like the grass I should have manicured and manipulated for my wife, but never found the time. Her smile glowing like the moon on Venice Beach. Her right cheek smooth and foreboding, like the hand it rests on. Surrendering to Baghdad. That's it.
Oh, man, that's good, man.
Yeah, I think so, too.
All right, so let's see. You got it from the email that we sent out this morning. Yeah. Which list
Poets,
did you... Yeah. The Cobalt Poets list?
Yeah. Cobalt Poets, yahoogroups.com.
Oh, good. Great. So you must know Teresa then, right? Because she reads over at the Cobalt quite a bit, don't you?
I may have met her. I've only been to the Cobalt two or three times.
Okay.
I don't know everybody over there. You know, I'm still new to the area, but I'm not sure whether I know Teresa or not.
Okay. How do you like Rick?
Yeah. He and I, at first, it was a little bumpy with him and I because our egos sort of intertwined and didn't get along. But lately, yeah, we've been getting along really well. He's very witty, a very intelligent guy, very, very funny, very smart.
Yeah, he is. Does and Rick have an ego?
What?
I didn't think Rick had room in his body for an ego.
Oh, yeah, he's got more than enough room. Like 10 miles of it. But I have a big one, too, so, you know, we kind of, we get along pretty well, though. I'm featuring over there at the Cobalt Cafe on September 11th. So if you want to, you know, come by at 9 o'clock, come check me out.
Okay, I will. That sounds great. So, Radomir, you got a last name, man?
Luza. Luza. It's L-U-Z-A. It's Czech. Radomir Luza.
Radomir Lucia.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, you're going to be at the Comedy Store on Monday night.
Tomorrow night at 8:30.
The 27th at 8:30. Which room are you going to be in?
The original room downstairs. And then at 10 o'clock, I'll be up at the belly room at 10 o'clock.
Okay, you're going to be in the original room at 8:30 and then the belly room at 10 o'clock.
Right.
And you're also going to be at the Cobalt.
Featuring on September 11th, yeah.
On September 11th.
9 o'clock.
All right, well, thanks a lot for calling, man.
Well, Mr. Maverick, keep up the good work, brother. We need to spread the poetry around because Lord knows we don't get paid much for this. The government should support us more, and we need more venues and avenues like you to get it out there to the people so more people can start writing and start sending this stuff and submitting, and more poets can be, you know, developed and grown locally.
Yes, yes, definitely.
So, God bless, and thanks for having me.
You too. Thanks for calling in, man.
You bet, man. God bless.
God bless you.
Bye.
All right.
All right. So that was our first call. And,
We've got, Yeah, that was a pretty cool reading. I like that. Radomir, thank you. Radomir is going to be at the, and I just met him on the phone just now. Radomir is going to be at the Comedy Store tomorrow night, August 27th, 8:30 p.m. In the original room and 10 o'clock in the belly room. And he's also going to be featuring at the Cobalt on September 11th. Cool. So I've definitely got to be there. I'm going to put that in my calendar. Okay. So we were starting off with you, Teresa.
Okay, cool.
And so, yeah, what do you have there for us?
This doesn't really have a title.
Okay.
My lover uses his words like a prize fighter. A little more than a high school grad with a PhD from the streets. His life story clearly tattooed on his body. Son of this city now, prophet off the streets. He's teaching me to be more practical. Tie good, strong knots. Block his punches. Build a treehouse out of tomorrows. My lover and I here at the beach leave our trail on the trackless open sea. We're drifting galaxies like the ones beneath that give birth to new reefs. We're living on fingertip kisses and borrowed time next to washed-up fishing buoys. This subway to the sea from L.A. seems long. My mind drifts from this town of Our Lady of the King of Beats and hippies and drifters, where we get lost in the crowd to long silences that come in the form of burnt toast and parking tickets stuffed in glove boxes, to my sister-in-law now running marathons, running and running and running. She says she's never going to stop. Her son will stop running for a minute, put his iPod down long enough to say, I can't hear you with this thing on. Here in Venice, the sore spot of California, my lover and I pass vendors selling their knives and combs and coins and souls here on the razor's edge.
Mm.
Here, I feel suddenly unbearably present, eyes wide open, ready for the other shoe to drop. Like the story of two young lovers, a high school football star and his willowy girlfriend in a car on a country road. You just know something's going to happen around the corner, and it isn't going to be good. Further down the boardwalk, past the what the fuck, it's just a buck, homeless princes on benches and suburban moms with graffiti charms. Past pot seeds and love beads and drug trips and drum hips. Past Bible circles and grisly old men who stumble out of bars in the middle of the day, blinking their eyes like they just came in from underground, I realize my lover is everything I'm not. And though he says he needs me to do the things he doesn't think he can do, I tell him I need him to help me say the things I don't think I can say.
Hmm.
But like a boxer, he's teaching me I must stand here alone and tell my truth.
Very nice. Very nice. And you don't have a title for that yet.
Not yet.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need a title so far. It's nice. Very good. Very
Thanks.
Good. Okay. Let's swing the mic over to Stosh.
Okay. Well, I'll read my poem about Venice.
Mm-hmm.
So that was sort of a Venice-flavored poem. But, this one is a Venice song. With no more than the usual amount of poison and flames running through my veins, I find myself on the left coast of America, where it's always happy hour among the henna tattoos and the cheap sunglasses. Oh, Venice, where the ghosts of the beatniks blow about the beach like plastic grocery bags, and the survivors of the 60s are scattered like cigarette butts in the sand, and the sky is clear just beyond the helicopters. Oh, Venice, oh, beauty and brutality, oh, suntans and squalor, oh, hippie and cholo wannabes, oh, tourists and homeless, oh, your rich dowager aunt, Beverly Hills, and you, scary junkie cousin to Santa Monica, where the seagulls have learned to talk and they cry, more, more, and the palm trees have learned to dance in self-defense, and rabid squirrels in the park push purloined grocery carts, and the pier shivers like it's got Parkinson's, and every beauty has a price tag. Oh, Venice, where the Sufi bumper sticker salesman takes $3 for a quote from Gandhi that will grace the rear end of a Lexus, and the wind-burnt schizophrenic rolls up his filthy sleeping bag and wonders if his favorite doorway is occupied, and the ponytailed police officer issues a citation to the Japanese tourist on the rented bicycle, and the guy with the blonde highlights waxes his longboard, and the chick with the stringy black rinse job and the sexy overbite hefts a purse that resembles a jeweled octopus. Oh, Venice, your drugstore ballerina in a clown costume, your roses painted on cinder block, your flat-tanned bellies and braided beards, your strugglers and surfers and skaters and strollers and suckers, you're scared and you're sacred and you're stoned. Oh, Venice, where I take notes as if looking into a mirror, because Venice, I don't need the sea, but I need the people, like any prophet, to get the message from and to get the word to.
Ooh, powerful. I like that. That was good.
I found that
good.
I find California, just California itself, the physical California and the mental California and the California as a state of mind, very inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
Our friend there, last caller, was from New York.
And yeah.
You know, he's writing about hanging out at Dupar's, you know, and mm-hmm. it's just, it gets into you. There's a lot here. And just the physical beauty of it, and then just the strangeness for us transplants. You know,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was talking last night. It seems to me that when you live here on the edge of the coast, you know, on the edge of the country, and there's just nothing from, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, next stop Hawaii, you know,
yeah.
3,000 miles over nothing. It just, you have large open parts in your mind, and you know where I'm from in Chicago, and you can't see more than 5 miles in any direction because there's something in your way, and it's generally man-made, and you know, big and ugly and gray and cement. Now here, you can look in any given direction and see snow on top of a mountain that you know is 20, 30, 40 miles away. You know, and it does something to the transplant's head. I think.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, and that kind of goes into what we were discussing a little bit before the program. It's like, how has Los Angeles influenced your perceptions and your poetry, and how would your poetry go in a different way that you wouldn't see normally in Chicago? Yeah. And I guess I, being here, being a Los Angeles native, am really not, I take the physicality of California, I guess, for granted. And I think that there is, I think, and this is just my opinion, I think that the spirituality of California is a bit overrated, you know. So, but yeah, I love hearing that from you because it just gives me, it, you know, forces my mind to go in a different direction and re-examine what it's like to be in California. So, yeah, it was a really nice piece. Yeah, you're listening to Higher Ground, Coast to Coast. If you want to contribute your own work, please feel free to do so. Phone number here is 213-252-0998. And I've got another little piece here from my friend El Rivera. And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
I
all day a cheek kiss the things that we miss. All day a cheek kiss the things that we miss. Why should I lightly put the key in my own door? Quietly cross my own floor when I could stay in the streets. Embrace something sweet. Fight until we fall asleep so you can wake up with another beef. What's the point in war? What should I come home for? All day a cheek kiss the things that we miss. I don't see the point anymore. With all the hate in the nation, to come home to confrontation. Can't put the key in the door when I could stay in the streets. Embrace something sweet. Taste something sweet. Oh, call me a cheat for wanting love without defeat. Might not come home anymore. All day a cheek kiss the things that we miss. All day a cheek kiss the things that we miss. All day a cheek kiss. All day a cheek kiss. All day a cheek kiss the things that we miss. I was 13 in the streets. I had cold sores on my feet. It was winter in the east. It was cold. It was cold. A man walked up to me, said, I have a place you can sleep. You're welcome to stay till light. Wash your clothes, hang them overnight. Before I close my eyes, to my innocence and my surprise, he wanted more than just to sleep that night. I told him I was 13. He became forceful. He became mean. I was 13 in the streets. I had cold sores on my feet. It was winter in the east. It was cold, it was cold. That night I put on my wet clothes and walked out with my pride. I wanted to, but I let my clothes cry. Dripping dry, dripping dry, dripping dry, dripping dry. I wanted to, but I let my clothes cry. I was 13 in the streets. I had cold sores on my feet. It was January in the east. It was cold. 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 It was cold.
Okay, that was El Rivera, and that is from her CD entitled An Artist Named El Rivera. El is usually in Leimert Park, where you can find her most times. You can also find her on occasion over at the Poetry Lounge on Tuesdays over on Fairfax. And if you see her, she's always hustling, so she's going to have her CD on her. So, yeah, definitely ask her for a copy of her CD. She'll be happy to sell that to you for $10. And, you know, I'll tell you this right now, it's $10 worth, well spent, because I've known her for years, and she is an awesome artist, El Rivera. This is James Maverick. You're listening to Higher Ground, Coast to Coast, on killradio.org with my guests Stosh and Teresa. And we're just kicking back right now. We're sharing our influences and our poetry right now. So if you also like to share your poetry with us, by all means, give us a call. Phone number here is 213-252-0998. And Stash, you have something for us, right?
Oh, I got a bunch of stuff.
Okie dokie.
I got a bunch of stuff. We talk about influences, and one of the things that I write about is language and the nature of language and what it can do to you in a quantum mechanics kind of way. Mm-hmm. This is called Some History of Language, and it is a work that will continually be in progress because I'll always learn a little bit more. Hmm. Sort of an anecdotal history, incomplete history of language. Sheng Tzu blinked centuries past. Words capture ideas, he thought. Once you get the idea, you can forget the words, the way one forgets the worm after catching a fish, or forgets the snare after the rabbit is in hand. He wondered where he might find a man who'd forgotten about words. He thought he'd like to have a word with him. Shang may or may not have been enlightened, but he was a poet. Later, Bucky eschewed any second-hand god. His god was a verb. There are no things, he yelled. There are no solids. He stopped talking for a year or two so that he could see what it was doing to him. Sort of a lingual perceptual meds holiday. Bucky was to become more famous for domes than tomes. Count K then wondered the whys of World War I and decided that those particular photons of light and waves of sound impressing other photons stacked into nervous systems and wrapped in meat had an unfortunate tendency to negatively bend perceptions, which could become a fatal nuisance for those mammals he called time binders. He suggested we drop the is from use and consciousness. He grandfathered E prime. He pointed out the differences between maps and territories, and today it seems hardly anyone knows his name. Old Bull Balloon, with his purple-assed baboon, snuffed and sneered. It's a virus from outer space, he yelled at the judge, and he cut it all up into dream machines. Stately old queen and fruitcake trust fund bohemian, he influenced generations with his peculiar genius and shot his wife in the forehead. Dr. Tim and old Bob gave us all of that on top of a sugar cube. We had some tea and couldn't help but agree.
I like that. And it's still a work in progress, too. So,
probably write it for the rest of my life, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I wait to hear that evolve. Okay, and Teresa, what do you have there?
You know, speaking about California, so I was born and raised here. I've never really known anything other than California. So this is called Where I Came From. I come from a little ranch, half an acre of heaven, where I once ran free through persimmon tree forests, played stickball with pomegranates that fell from the sky among horses that once ran at Hollywood Park, played hide-and-seek with two beige and white Italian greyhound dogs. I come from parents of the 50s with their Sunday dinner at 6 and crockpot love. They preached about God and served religion up on dishes from Tide boxes and blue-chip stamp dreams. I come from pressure to go to college and meet a nice Catholic boy in grad school. I come from Grandma telling me as I dropped her off at church every Sunday at bingo, lock of the button and don't give a no ride to a stranger. They told me her rocking chair wisdom would one day be mine. I come from working each summer vacation north of the boulevard while friends camped and swam and lounged around in their two-piece leisure suits south of the boulevard. I come from always feeling like a motherless child, from being the oldest sister with two brothers, from an unhappy marriage where I was told my birth was the happiest day of my mother's life. A year to the day previous, my father was arrested in an adult bookstore raid. Just getting changed to use the payphone is what the police report said. I come from growing up being told someone would really, really love me, unconditionally, even with fat ankles from an irregular heartbeat condition and hair on my chin like Aunt Ethel. I come from not wanting to be labeled Italian, hiding the gnocchi and cannoli and mustard greens in the bread box along with all the other family secrets when my friends came over, and instead serving them Americana on Wonder Bread and Twinkies for dessert. I come from being taught that family ties were everything, the only thing, until my mom died and my dad started dating, and my brother divorced his wife, and now when the phone rings, it's only to say, I can't make it this weekend, I'm going to Vegas. I come from her white glove, crisp, creased, pleated, neatly placed expectations. From her telling him, shut the door, we don't live in a barn, and his rough around the edges reply, Joe Frazier used to train in that barn. From making promises to others I fully intend to keep, and promises to myself I break every day. I come from wanting an echo, a witness, even now after all this time, I still have a childlike hope and belief. To return where I came from among the persimmon trees, and with your help, maybe I can take you back to where you came from too.
Hmm. Very nice. Very nice. Cool. So, tell us a little bit more about that. Where did you, what gave you the inspiration for that one?
You know, when I was growing up, I grew up on a ranch. It was around an acre, and none of my friends grew up like that. So, all of my friends live south of the boulevard in their Mercedes, you know, and I'm pedaling my bike to school. And I had a lot of time to run in those fields and write and draw and play and make up my imagination because we only had one neighbor. And it really helped me be able to develop a need for kids, you know, to find that place where they can run. Because kids nowadays are just so boxed up in their tiny little places and they don't have backyards. So I think that really helped.
Yeah. And, yeah, even those kids who have yards with the backyards, you know,
don't go out there.
Don't go out there, yeah.
That's right. They're like my nephew. They're on their iPods and their Xboxes.
Yeah, they're working their thumbs out.
That's right.
So, goodness. So, cool. All righty. And do you have another one, Stosh?
You got to ask.
Yeah, nah, I don't have to ask, do I? Oh, before you do, let's talk about your reading over at Brand Bookstore.
Okay. Well, we do it pretty much every other month. It's always the last Thursday of that month. It is not an open mic. And I got a little flack about that because there are many people who feel that poetry is a big tent and, you know, everyone's welcome and, you know. And I think that's true to an extent. I think that there's a real good reason for open mics. You need them. You have to have them. But I also think that a showcase is not an exclusionist sort of endeavor. I think that it's a, well, I guess, you know, it is. It is, but it isn't, because I think that it's good to go and know that every reader that you hear is not going to just be working something out or trying to find their voice. They're all going to be of a pretty high caliber. I invite people to read who move me. And I'm very judgmental and very critical, and and if you float my boat, then you get invited. Now, the way it works is, it's a round robin. There's never any features. That's another, it's another reason that I get a little, I get a little flack from the community, you know, because people want to be featured, they want to be special. But at my place, at my reading, everybody sits in a big circle, and we do round robin, and once everybody who's been invited to read has had their turn, if you've shown up and you've listened and you've got something that we need to hear, you're encouraged to do that.
Oh, okay.
You know, you can step up. So it's not, it's, but it, but I want to make sure that everybody knows that it's not an open mic and they shouldn't come there expecting
to read.
You know, but they should come there expecting to leave inspired, because that's what happens. Everybody, I've never had anybody walk away from that reading and go, well, that was a waste of time. You know, man, those chairs are really hard in there. You know, whatever. You know, people are people leave that reading. Go, I got to go home and write now.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So it's a moving experience, and I invite you to come out and check it out. It's at the Brand Bookshop,
which is the one of the most soulful bookshops in Southern California, I think.
And, oh yeah,
and it's at 7:30. The Brand Bookshop is at 231 in Brand Boulevard in mm-hmm. Glendale, and it happens at 7:30 on Thursday. It's every other month, generally. Sometimes we have to put it off, but it's this month. That turns out to be August 30th, mm-hmm. and then we'll skip next month, and we'll go the next month. And then, I should probably mention that all of the books in the store are 20% off during the reading.
Oh, wow. That's good. That's a great incentive to stop by, because they've got great books.
They've got an enormous collection of books, too. It's very
yes, they do.
Normal. And Jerome, the owner, is a hoot.
Jerome is cool.
Go over there and have him abuse you for 20 minutes and just enjoy the hell out of the experience. It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. So, if you haven't been to Brand Bookstore, like Stosh says, it is an enormous collection of books. The only other one that I know that is that big or was that big was the one at Hollywood Book City on Hollywood Boulevard. And I'm one of those old school Angelinos. I mean, whenever I wanted a book, I would go to Hollywood Boulevard, because back in the day, back in the 70s, back in the 80s, Hollywood was nothing but bookstore. There was Cherokee Books. There was Red's bookstore on Las Palmas, I think. There was Bond Street Books. And as the rents started going up and there was the interest in books was waning, bookstores started closing left and right. There was a B. Dalton bookseller that closed, and Bond Street moved over to Glendale. There was a huge migration of bookstores over to Glendale along Brand Boulevard. And now even that is starting to fade, because there was, I think, Longfellow's is still there?
Still there.
Okay. There was another one that was across the street from Brand Bookstore. That closed, I think, within the last year.
Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. It was further south.
Yeah, a little further south. Mm-hmm. There's Borders Books, which is kind of like where you can pick up a nice Mick book anytime you like to. But some, you know, book with personality, you want to go to Brand Bookstore. You want to go to Longfellow's, which specializes in detective fiction, right?
Yes,
they do. So if you want books with personality, oh, man, Brand Boulevard is the place to be. And again, Thursday at 7:30 p.m.
Correct.
Is when you have your reading.
Correct.
Okay. Cool.
See the regulars there, and then one or two people that I've seen in the last month and a half that I've invited to read.
Mm-hmm.
So come by and get dazzled.
All right.
That's what happens, man.
Yes, man.
Man. Okay. Okay. Do like Sammy is here.
We're going to do a Sammy Fest. We're a chock full of Sammys, man. Okay.
All right. I'm going to change up a little bit here. I'm going to do a poem, a love poem. But it's still got mm-hmm. some California in it. Because
okay.
So much stuff does these days mm-hmm. for me. It's called Mi Calafia. Calafia is the word that California is thought by some to have been derived from. It's a mythical paradise portrayed in a 16th century Spanish romance. Calafia was a difficult-to-reach land with gold in plenty, free-loving Amazons living in caves, and strange beasts. Mi Calafia, waiting again for what I have come to expect from a life used to long seasons of chill, skies of slate, frozen earth, a world that turns to night. Waiting again, after feeling the warmth rush through the gray. In my darkness, a light such as yours is a dream. For fear was the hammer, and guilt the anvil that shaped my metal. And I am wont to wonder and worry. And you are all sunlight and seashore. Mi Calafia, it's simple and transparent. Wanting love and wanting help loving and loving the self enough to stay alive. Wanting yin energy and finally just the sin of wanting and its cousin, infatuation. The first of those predictable stages you taught me about. calling you to talk about tomorrow. I hear the promise in my voice and end the night scolding myself to sleep for daring to sense hope while staring at the sunlight on the water till my eyes are filled with too many sparkling reflections to see, for kissing your fingers, for resting my head on your shoulder and watching the rhythm of your breasts while breathing, and for filling my graying head with wishes. Is there any love without blindness? Is every meaning a lie we tell ourselves? Mikalafia, yours is wisdom, and mine is wounding. And if I let my mind storm and flood without worry, dreams come rushing down off the mountains and filling the washes under the highways. You would become a passel of hopes and reasons. You would become California, stretched along the far end of my continent, a fabled promise, a rush to gold, a last stop, a last chance.
That's nice. And that was a love poem. What was the name of it? Mikalafia?
Mikalafia.
Kalafia. Beautiful. Do you have a love poem there, Teresa?
Well, you know, that first one I read was my love poem.
Oh, okay.
Got love, 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 and slop buckets here at Kill Radio.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you know, I think I have another one.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah, that's great.
Okay.
Like I said, anything goes here.
Okay.
Even if it has, like, F words in it.
All right.
Okay.
Cracked. Recently, I've begun to see the therapist again. Apparently, I'm stuck at the emotional age of 13. It was recommended to me I buy lots of colorful socks, wear my hair in ponytails, giggle when I can, take long, warm showers with pretty-smelling scented soap, be gentle with myself, get plenty of rest, sing to the songs on the radio, and paint my toenails bright pink. Maybe begin to take some sort of antidepressant. Quit my full-time job and write. Yes, write poetry, he said. He said it could take years to get over the damage done to my poet soul. I told him that I had a husband once, and we had been together for years, but that we weren't together anymore. I told him he was the best person I ever knew. He said something simple like, but then he really never loved you if you're still not together. I said, but you don't understand. We went through everything together. He said, but you're not going through this together. So he wasn't really in touch with his love for you. So he never really loved you. I said, well, hearing that is making me even more depressed. This doesn't seem to be helping very much. Finally, he said, go find yourself another poet, one at the emotional age of, say, 12, so you'll fit right together. I paid my $150 and walked out of there crying. But I did as he said, found another poet, me with my colorful socks and him wanting to hold my hand and skip down the street. Yesterday, he told me he loved me and that it was hard to stay mad at me, and flaws and all, he said maybe he always would love me. This morning, after singing out of tune in the shower, I finally realized there's a crack in everything, and that's how the light gets in.
Mm. That's beautiful. That's really nice. I like that. What was the title on that one?
Cracked.
Cracked. Very nice. Okay. We're going to take one more break, and we'll start cleaning up here. Okay. This is James Maverick. You're listening to Higher Ground, Coast to Coast, with my featured artists this week, Stash Maciek and Teresa. If you like to share your poetry, or if you'd like to have a question for them that you'd like to have them answer for you, give me a call here. Give us a call here. Phone number is 213-252-0998. And once again, this is a good friend of mine, L. Rivera. This one is entitled Moonshine, and I kind of like it. It's one of my favorites. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being here.
I was born at the height of industry, at the finale of bebop and the crest of the civil rights movement. There was talk of technology. My favorite Martian was on TV and lasted. Africa was Tarzan. My father was a janitor. My mother was a light-skinned woman. I, the dark child of it. My great-grandmother was old. 60s television was a panoply of white stars, the Vietnam War, and Parading Crusaders. Johnson, Lady Bird. Nixon, Watergate. Ford, Lucky. Betty Ford Center. Carter, Reagan. Technology industry is dust. Reagan, Bush, Clinton. Another Bush with more promises of change.
I'm feeling woozy, you might lose me if you don't hold me real tight. You embrace me when you face me, when you kiss me, it's night.
You know what? I already played this one. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to admit that I made a faux pas here. Because I don't have many faux pas because I'm perfect. yeah, right. And fortunately, I'm sitting far enough away from my guests so that when that bolt of lightning hits, they're going to be safe. But this is Moonshine by El Rivera.
Deborah, I don't know if any of y'all know Virginia, but I lived in this area called Burnt Chimney, which is where Booker T. Washington also lived. Probably the only thing that happened up there. But I say that to say that there was only one family in the town, their name was Pagan. And in the facility that I was living in, it was a little kiddie spot up there. They jammed the black kids on a little plantation, little kind of and all. And it was a little teeny town. It was a smaller area, Rocky Mountain, Burnt Chimney. I still don't know why they called it Burnt Chimney. I'd like to know. But when we go, it's like 40 miles outside of Roanoke, for those of you that know Roanoke. When you go in the town, at least when we go into town, this was like 72, 73, little nice, let's say country people, would give us a ride in the town, and little dark chargers, whatever those things were. But I mean, I think one door opened and the rest of the thing was window seats, you know? And so we used to think it was the greatest thing in the world to fly on town, I mean, down in the city at 100 miles an hour, no seatbelts, no nothing, you know, white man is riding, wee! So, this is what this is about. Running is like moonshine, because I found out just a few years ago that they would run moonshine in the town when they take us. So that's why you're driving so fast. And the only thing I liked about being there were these rides, because it was like a roller coaster. Running is like moonshine, taking us through backwoods, bouncing off ass seats, wind passing off our cheeks, running us like moonshine, kicking up the dust and the sticks, buried in the country, unsafe rides in the wind, innocence and sin, red charger drawing a string, running us like backwoods and weeds, giggles and white teeth, wind passing off our cheeks, running us like moonshine, kicking up the dust and the sticks, burying the country, unsafe riding the wind, innocence and sin, red charger drawing a string, running us like moonshine.
Okay, this is James Maverick. You're listening to Higher Ground Coast to Coast. That was El Rivera, and that was Moonshine. So I had a little bit of a repeat from earlier on in the CD, so I apologize for that. I had taken it out so I can find that cut, and I forgot to set the CD to that spot there. So hopefully you really liked her first piece enough that you wanted to hear it twice, and in which case I've done you a favor. So if you want, you can thank me by giving me a call at 213-252-0998. So we're about coming to the end of everything here. So what I'd like to do right now is, I mean, we don't just write stuff on paper and look for places to read it. We are also, as poets, very active in and around our community. And there's been some other work that Teresa has done. You've worked with the Valley Contemporary Poets as well as the Emerging Urban Poets. So tell me a little bit about the Emerging Urban Poets, because I know a little bit more about VCP. But what do you do in your work with the Emerging Urban Poets?
Well, with the Emerging Urban Poets, that's really Dawn Campbell's group. Mm-hmm. And so we used to meet on Saturdays and get together and inspire each other to write different poems. But, you know, through Don, he's such a great source in this area for everybody, that through him I've been able to branch out to other groups just through knowing him. So there's another group called the Echo Space Poetry Collective, and we're in Highland Park, and we work with the underserved communities. And actually, I think there's an event tonight that I maybe was supposed to be at that I wasn't able to go.
Oh, what time was it?
I think it was from 5 to 7, but I was at a family reunion anyway, so I wasn't able to make it. But we're doing stuff all over, bringing new poets in to the forefront.
Oh, beautiful.
And with the VCP, we're trying to also bring people to the Valley for poetry.
Yes, and earlier on, a couple of friends of ours, Brendan Constantine, there was a woman named Nicole, I can't remember her last name, Nicole Hervey, I believe, were involved with VCP.
Right.
So the core has kind of evolved and changed a little bit. So Brendan's not in the core anymore.
Right, Brendan's not in the core, and there's four of us, so it's Jerry Garcia, Claudia Handler, Paul Koenig, and myself.
Okay. And Claudia is a remarkable poet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll get her on the program, too. That would be...
Paul Koenig is no slouch either.
Yeah?
You should definitely get him.
Yeah, and let me see. When the three of us went to the Cobalt, that's when I met Jerry Garcia.
Yeah, he's great.
Jerry's not bad either. He's pretty good.
Jerry's fantastic. And Jerry supports everybody. I mean, there isn't a reading he's not at supporting somebody. I just love that about him.
Mm-hmm.
He's fantastic.
Cool.
So I'll be editing the anthology with the VCP.
Yeah, and you got a couple of anthologies.
Yeah, I have a few of my own, and so at the end of October, I'll be having a reunion anthology for the two series that I ran last year.
Okay. And do you have a website yet?
I don't have a website yet, but I assume to have a website.
Okie dokie. Now, about your anthology reading, it's going to be on October 26th.
Right, and it'll have as many people who were featured in 2006 and 2007 come to share and get their copy of the anthology.
Cool. And where can we go to find out more information about the anthology?
People can go to tc_art@hotmail.com.
Okay.
They can just email me.
Beautiful.
Okay.
Beautiful. Okay, and that's tc_art, A-R-T, at hotmail.com. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And Stosh, you've got a website too, right?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Haven't done a whole heck of a lot lately. I've been kind of removed from my ability to work on the website. But I occasionally post new poetry there. The last major thing that we put up there was a book. We sold a book that I made by hand. It was at a friend's house, and he had some paper, and I had a little time on my hands. So I drew this big book, and I filled it with pictures of smoking monkeys wearing fezes and put my poems in there. And he said, you know, somebody would buy that. And I'm like, what are you? You're out of your tree. Nobody would buy that. He's like, I'll betcha. So we filmed a commercial that evening where I stood there and touted the book. And then we loaded that video onto YouTube. And then we put a link from my website, stoshmacek.com, to that. And be darned if the poetry community in L.A. didn't all kind of get together and bid on the book
and end up buying it and giving it to Beyond Baroque for their archives.
Wow.
So it was a kind of an interesting situation all the way around. And you can see that silly advertisement we did if you go to the website. And there's always, about once a month or once every couple of months, I'll put another poem up there. There's also some of my artwork is up there and other writings. I like to do reviews of local bands and stuff like that.
Cool.
So there's a couple of those up there as well.
Cool. Okay. So your website is Stash Maciek.
StashMaciek.com.
Okay. That's S-T-O-S-H. MACHEK.com.
That's correct.
Okay, cool. And you also have the reading at the Brand Bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the address there again?
231 North Brand Boulevard in the sleepy little hillside hamlet of Glendale.
And it is a sleepy little hillside hamlet, except on like Friday and Saturday nights where you have a whole bunch of crazy guys in their BMWs just drive up and down Broadway. Like they have no cares in the world. Okay. And Teresa, you're going to be at, your work is great with the VCP, as well as Emerging Urban Poets. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you guys had a chance to come out.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. And again, this is James Maverick. I'd like to thank everybody for listening to Higher Ground, Coast to Coast. And I'm going to leave you with one more piece by El Rivera, followed by a musical interlude. I'm kind of like feeling like Les Nubians since I played them last week, and they are so damn addictive. So thank you for listening. And in 2 weeks, I'm going to be featuring one of my featured artists is going to be Deborah Edler Brown. So she's going to be here in 2 weeks on September 2nd. It's going to be Labor Day weekend, so I may not be doing anything. So we'll see what happens. I may have a best of program, the best of the last four shows. So it's probably it's probably going to be a very, very special show, and I'll be poring over the hours and hours of footage that I have to pick something just for you. So thanks for listening. You're listening to Kill Radio. In about 10 minutes, you're going to be listening to Radio Misterioso with DJ Space Brother, who has the most dynamic and unpredictable show on Kill Radio. You never know week to week what he's going to be playing. So, again, the phone number here is 213-252-0998. If you are listening to Radio Misterioso, throw him a curveball and ask for something by Barnes and Barnes, preferably fish heads, okay? Drive him crazy. Thanks for listening. Peace.
Just yesterday, it seems, the distance from my hopes and dreams. Memory centered in my mind, pursuits abandoned, left behind. It seemed like it was a million years away. It's hard to believe tomorrow was yesterday. I vowed my love for you in my youth. Today, it's easy to share that truth. Yesterday, you were the one revolving the earth, shining the sun. It brings smiles just to remember those lustful Januaries to December. In those days, we were just running free with plans and whimsicality. I vowed my love would never end. We traveled the distance, now we're old friends. What a difference a day makes, the many forms the change takes. Change, the only permanence I've learned, from fires lit, now burning. I can't imagine time standing still, even with love's strongest will. We sit here now, not a scholar, not a star, simply the people who we are. A wrinkle, a gray hair, too, signifying the struggles we've been through. Pioneers, veterans of life, we've conquered the strictest of strife. I bid you fortunes, my friend. May your spirit never end. Become all that you dream. May you shine and glisten and gleam. Yesterday, it was your love I yearned, love from a fire that now burns. It's funny how things change. Emotionally, how things become strange. Change, the only permanence I've learned, from fires lit.
I got trouble with the brothers that be frontin', about all how their girls be moanin' and gruntin'. The ones that say they did everyone but their mama. The ones that are always bringin' you puddin'-tane drama. The guy's only beatin' an egg, just beatin' a new hole in her leg. Your head's pounding the headboard, your neck's under attack, and the next morning you feel like he's got his foot still in your back. The guy's just beating an egg, just pounding a new hole in her leg. The brother steps to me and says, L, I know you be with the girlies. The brother steps to me and says, L, I know you be with the girlies. What's that tongue thing all about? Can you help me out? Now here's a guy asking a dyke for her trade secrets. Here's a guy asking a dyke for her trade secrets. Now, I have to admit, I shared with him one or two. And then I said, when she hollers and when she yells, whisper in her ear, tongue by L. When she hollers and when she yells, whisper in her ear, tongue by L.
Love.